Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to mitigate crises and help teams get back on track. This podcast is about helping the C-suite leader to navigate challenges with confidence. For today's leader, I'm here to help you get back on track. Tomorrow's leader, let me partner with you to learn the secrets of the C-suite. Wherever you're at in your career, this is the podcast for you. Hello, I am Deb Coviello, the Drop-In CEO, and I want to thank you for joining us on another episode of the podcast where I have the good fortune of having amazing, amazing people who share their insights about leadership. And along the way, I do hope they inspire you. And just know I do this podcast, I bring on these guests to help the C-suite leader of today and tomorrow to navigate their challenges with confidence. And today, I'm so excited because we are bringing back onto the show Carolyn Suara, who is a leadership consultant, team coach, certified Dare to Lead facilitator, and a two-time best-selling author. And her award-winning book, Evolve, The Path to Trauma-Informed Leadership, brings new focus on an often ignored yet critical leadership component, the nervous system. And that's why I'm so excited. Carolyn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Deb. It really is such a pleasure to be back here.
So for my audience, Carolyn was an instrumental part of the beginning of the Drop-In CEO podcast. She was one of my earliest guests. I found her work quite fascinating. Her first book was amazing. And we just stayed in touch with each other. And that's the beauty of the network. It's important to cultivate these relationships, not just for myself, but for my listeners, because you never know when they might inspire you. And we bring them back onto the show to share their insights. So I just want to get right to it, Carolyn. Your book, The Path to Trauma-Informed Leadership. We talked about this earlier, but I think it is such an important piece of work. And I just would love for you to share a bit about how did you arrive to putting all this work together?
Yeah, you know, probably the easiest way to describe it is research is me search. I needed to figure some stuff out about me and why I was bumping into so many challenges that showed their face in the way of self-doubt, lack of confidence, and all of that was going on internally, but on the outside, everything looked great. And that's really what prompted me to dig into this.
So I'm going to, this is going to be a very interesting conversation because I think you're describing me. Yeah. I look like I have a positive persona. And yes, I'm a happy, peppy, positive person. But oh my, there is a lot of churn inside. So tell me more.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's what I'm trying to do, Deb, is we all carry a lot of stuff from our past, right? We hit a certain age in life. We have certain experiences. And then, you know, we look around. It's like, whoa. What's just happening? And I think there's this unsettling, or maybe there's just like a little something like, what is this really who I am? And I think it exists in every single one of us. Women, men, really gender is irrelevant. I think it's really a part of our own personal development. It shows up in leadership. You know, it showed up in my corporate life. It showed up in my own business. And when it's reflected back to you, through your children and just some things happening in our family, I'm like, I'm at the center of all this chaos. Like, it's me. It's like, well, like, just thank you, Taylor. It's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
So I would just love to bring this a little bit more to a relatable situation without divulging, you know, everything, because I want people to resonate with this because, again, we all have baggage. We all have history. We try to navigate through it because we want to be the best person in service to our company, to our family, to our community. But if there's stuff festering below that we're constantly putting a mask on, we need to pull it forward. So how was it manifesting in yourself for which then you wanted to go deeper into this research?
There was just the relationships in my life, my kids in particular, did not feel fulfilling. And you might be saying, oh, well, relationships with teenagers aren't meant to be fulfilling. And I think that that's where part of the challenge is. I think that that's what we've been trained to say and do. I don't think the teenage years are easy, but I just did not like the dynamic. And it just felt so out of line with what I wanted. And I turned, instead of looking at everybody else, I'm like, I've got to look at me. There's something about me. And so, you know, for me, there was a certain system that really helped open my eyes up to a personality structure. And I think we all have, you know, different sort of tools or systems that we like. For me, it was the Enneagram and doing work specifically with Beatrice Chestnut and Yirani Upayas. And that showed me this other side to all of these great traits. But when you overuse them and you are unaware of the impact it's having on others, that's an eye-opener. And so that was sort of the first piece of this journey into writing this book and exploring the concept of trauma.
So this is really interesting. You, the title of your book is Evolve, and I love that. That's the name of your podcast, is The Path to Trauma-Informed Leadership. Can you break that down for me? Because, I mean, I think I get it, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I'm going to back up and just share a story that happened that brought this word into my light. Because one, I didn't think I had trauma. And two, I'm like, trauma-informed? What place does that have in leadership? We've got things to do. Trauma-informed is for the medical professionals. I was in a training with a colleague and there was a task that we needed to do. And I felt really uncomfortable with it. And I voiced that. My colleague said, well, can't you just trust me? I've done this for years. And I did trust my colleague. Cognitively, I trusted my colleague. And the task is sort of secondary. I won't get into what it was. But what happened in me is, as I said, I trust you, tears started to flow down my eyes. And my other colleague texted me and said, are you okay? I was like, I don't know what just happened there. I have no idea what just happened. And this colleague said, I think there's something about being trauma-informed. And the ask really wasn't a trauma-informed ask. I was like, what are you talking about? It just asked me to do this activity. And so that got me thinking about, why did I spontaneously cry? You know, if I kind of fast forward a little bit to my Dare to Lead work, there's a concept that Brené Brown has termed in her work called chandeliering. I don't believe that that's a medical term. I think that's a Brenéism. But it's when we take emotion and we push it down and we don't deal with it and it decides to resurface at inopportune or unexpected times. That was an example of chandeliering. I think I know now what triggered it or what hooked me into it. But at the time, I didn't. And it was just that friend of mine saying the word trauma-informed. And I thought, okay, I need to go learn more. And I just dove into the research. There's been a lot of new research and a lot of new science and perspective that has completely reshaped my understanding of what that word trauma means and why trauma-informed leadership is needed in our corporate workspaces. It's not just for the medical professional. It's not for educational institutions. I believe it truly is. There's a space for it. An understanding of it is necessary for our corporate institutions as well.
Okay. So, and this is wonderful because I think while we show up every day to do our job and we're in service to people and our clients and customers, we don't do enough about providing leaders with the tools to understand the circumstances and how to respond. Again, we're programmed a certain way, but sometimes we are presented with things that might trigger something or help or make us retract. So tell me a little bit more.
Yeah.
Define trauma-informed, or let's just keep going with this.
Yeah. So I'm over 50, only by 2 years. But, you know, if I go back to like what shaped the meaning of this word for me, it was really based on old beliefs, lack of science, and the word trauma showed up in hospital. Like I used to love watching ER. My mom worked at a hospital. So I'd hear the word trauma related to an event, right? Remember George Clooney, Noah Wiley, ER. So trauma can mistakenly be understood as an event, right? If we've had COVID-19, for example, The event itself can be called a trauma. However, trauma actually is our response to the event. I like to really simplify. If I take the words of Gabor Maté, who's a really well-known physician in the space, he calls it an emotional wound. So was it COVID? COVID was not the trauma. It was our emotional wounding, our emotional ability to deal with all of the emotion around that event that is actually the trauma. And when we don't have the resources to cope with such an emotional situation or any sort of overwhelming situation, if we don't process this those emotions, they get stored in our body.
I want to respond. I have a question here.
I paused there on purpose.
Because there's another set of concepts, emotional intelligence, about how do we manage our emotions and how do we manage our response to the world and others. And emotional intelligence, the way I look at it is, one, we got to understand ourselves. Why do we respond or react a certain way, and how to control it such that and manifest it such that we're much more responsible in our emotions and our interactions? But this seems a bit contrary or complementary in how to deal with the emotions. Because if we don't deal with it,
we'll
never achieve emotional intelligence. I don't know.
And I'm not saying, like, so I think the work of, you know, I think of Daniel Goleman comes to mind with emotional intelligence. And I think there's so much amazing work there. To me, this is complementary.
Okay.
What I've always struggled with is emotional intelligence. It makes it sound very cognitive. I'm going to think about my emotions. And so that to me is one piece of it. Never been asked a specific question. The eye-opener for me was that there is this whole somatic or body, right? Somatic means, you know, body. There's this whole somatic element to emotions that I just didn't know and didn't care to understand, because you know what? Emotions just get in the way of getting stuff done. But if you look at that word, emotion, energy in motion. Mm. So feelings start off in your body as a sensation. Your body is sending you a sensation, an emotion. And we need to process that emotion. And if we are unable to process that emotion, if it's too big and we don't have the resources, either how to do it, maybe developmentally, we're too young to know how to deal with it or how to process it, or we've had so much of it in our life, we just cannot take anymore. Our body is miraculous. So it's like, okay, Carolyn, we got you. We're just going to store this memory over here. You're not going to remember it, but we're going to store it here in your body. So when something similar shows up 20, 30, maybe 50 years down the road, we got you. We got you. And we'll make sure you get a signal, i.e. tears forming, so that you don't have to be worried about it getting you. I mean, I just really simplified it there, but that's an example. Our past lives with us. And that was the biggest eye-opener for me, is you do not get a choice at choosing your trauma. You are not your trauma. We don't even have to use the word trauma. We can call them adverse experiences or difficult situations that we've had in our life.
So is your work around then resolving those emotions around those traumas, those wounds to our either emotions or persona or what have you, or is it to simply recognize and manage it a little bit differently?
Yeah, it's the recognition and the awareness of it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I don't want to be any of those things. And those are very important support people to have in your world if you're going to explore this. What I believe is really important for us to know is, if we want to accomplish these things in our workplaces that we say are really important, we want to live into our values, we want to have a sustainable business plan, we don't want to damage the environment, like all of these things we say we want to do, if we're truly serious about it, then we need to understand ourselves and what gets in the way of making that happen. And you and I both know, I'm going to guess, I won't implicate you, but I see far too many people and businesses who on the surface will say the words, but there's a difference in their actions. And there are far too many people in our workplaces that are burnt out, that are beyond capacity, and are still trying to keep up and feel like they're not good enough or they're not doing enough. And that's the vicious cycle, right? If I come back to the beginning of our conversation, what started this all off for me is this persona that showed up for everybody else, and this sort of like inner resistance or inner turmoil that was slowly starting to build up within me.
Mm. So I want to go a little bit deeper into your work, because I think maybe it will explain, or I can start relating to it, because I don't know. I believe I too, and again, my listeners get to listen to this conversation. Yes, there was trauma in my past. I think all of us have some kind of baggage or events that inflicted something that impacted our persona and how we respond now. But I'm curious to learn more about then how does this, the emotion, the nervous system, how does this all, the science that I think you've delved into, really impact our leadership? Because the more we can go into this science, which I think we don't know enough about, people may now be able to recognize if they have the trauma and maybe how to respond to it to be the best that we can.
Right. So I believe that we have three centers of intelligence, and there's lots of different sort of leadership theories out there that talk about that. We've got our head intelligence, our heart intelligence, and this body intelligence or gut intelligence. Sometimes people call it instinct. You with me? Because you just kind of made a face. So I was like, I'm pausing for a second. Does that make sense? Those three centers?
I appreciate that because I, as a leader trained, it's always in my head how to intellectualize stuff. Yep. And early in my career, not trusting my gut, but I'm leaning into my gut a lot more. And then there is the heart and all of that nervous system stuff that sometimes you just ignore. So keep going with it. I want to be able to see it in me.
The heart, like the emotional intelligence, the understanding emotions, all of that, and connecting with our own emotions. So what I learned was our instinct or our gut, our body, has a whole lot of wisdom. Let's invite the nervous system now into this conversation. Our body gathers information around us and in us and in between us. It gathers information through our senses, and it's taking in this incredible capacity of information. And then with it, it's telling our body, okay, here's what you got to do with this. So it's pretty fascinating. So really simply, as a leader, do you not want to access all of the data available to you so you can make the best decisions?
Of course, I'm an engineer.
Right. So here's what I'm saying with our nervous system is we don't need to become neuroscientists to understand all the inner workings. It's fascinating if you want to go there. In 1995, Stephen Porges talked about something called polyvagal theory. What that did is it fundamentally reshaped how we see the nervous system. And again, you know, maybe we can talk at a different point, but we don't need to get into all the details of the science except to know that our nervous systems are always communicating with each other under our level of consciousness. So have you ever been in a room, Deb, with somebody who is so calm and soothing? And maybe it's a really pressure-filled situation, but there's a calmness that's exuding from them. Have you had that experience before?
I actually think I'm that person.
Okay.
In the room amidst chaos.
Okay. Have you been in a room with somebody who is pretty anxious or worried, or maybe sitting around and moving and shifting and shaking and not shaking, but like just like kind of antsy?
Of course. Yes, I have.
So those two examples, those are nervous systems that are in different states.
Okay.
And all I'm suggesting is that as leaders, it's really helpful to know what state you're in. And this is what polyvagal theory, one element of it, helps us do, is it helps us understand the state that we're in. And when we are in certain states, there are three, we are unable to access something called our social engagement system, which basically means our ability to be in flow and be connected and be playful and really hear other people. So if we're trying to lead from two out of those three states and we're trying to be creative and create psychological safety and do all these things that we say we want to do, and we're in one of these two states, there's a whole bunch of data that we're just ignoring.
I wanted to take a moment to remind you that a recent study showed nearly 60% of leaders feel depleted at the end of the day. And this feeling is a key indicator of burnout and makes it difficult to lead and inspire others. If you've ever experienced that restless exhaustion, you know why CEOs are amongst the most likely candidates for experiencing job frustration. I wrote The CEO's Compass, your guide to get back on track, to confront those feelings and create a plan that is sustainable for you and your organization. I created a 7-point assessment that will help you figure out your problems in days, not months. And it includes so many resources, worksheets, videos, and much, much more. If this is you, please head over to my website, dropinceo.com, and click on my products, the CEO's Compass, and order yours on Amazon or other outlets. And now, back to the conversation. So if I could lean into this, and this goes back to one of my awakenings when I left corporate and was trying to start my own business. I was reconnecting with people, had breakfast with somebody, and I asked them the bold question. I said, you know, when you see me come into a room, I said, what do you see? How do you feel about me? I just wanted transparency. And she says, well, you know, you're delightful. You're great to talk to. You're very busy, but I don't sense that you're always present. And the word presence was also a very new concept to me. And that hit me like a ton of bricks, for which I have been continually working really, really hard to be right in the moment, be present. I used to take copious notes when interviewing people, but now I'm like, no, let's just see what other question comes up, because if I'm too focused on the list, I may not get to the nuggets. So being calmer and really in the moment, I think, is better. It's not about the agenda or the tactical thing, but it is more about that connectivity with that person. So there's no disconnect between, Deb wants to talk to me, but she looks like she's thinking about three other things at the same time.
I would call that attunement. You're attuning into the other person, and that's our nervous system talking to each other. Mm-hmm.
But I have to work really hard at it. It's a new skill for me. Yes,
it is. Well, and that's why I think it's so important for our leaders to know about these concepts, because there's a barrage on our senses. We can see there's things dinging, there's lights flashing. There are so many things that are taking up the capacity of our senses. It's hard to stay present because there's so much going on. So how do we cultivate some practices, some rituals, so that we can be more present?
Yeah, and I want to go there in a moment here, but my brain is going miles a minute here. I mean, it is hard as a leader when you have a ship to steer.
Yep.
You've got an agenda to get done. You try to make time for people to get to know them personally outside of the situation. But I guess, how can we as leaders, if we have to lead a meeting, and it's maybe some stressful, maybe there's some capacity issues, maybe there's resource issues, et cetera. And inside, you're also feeling some knots, like this meeting has to go really, really good. I've got to make sure I get my opinion. And you're feeling those physiological issues inside, stress.
Yep.
And if we continue to operate in that place, that stress is going to do something to us. So I guess I went looking for some advice for those high achieving people that are kind of pushing aside.
It's a fabulous question. So our goal is not just to be in this state. So we call this state ventral vagal, which basically let's just call that green. Another state is sympathetic or an activated state. And that can cause us to do fight or flight. And then there's another state that's called dorsal vagal, which is really a disconnected state. Call that red. So if we've got green, yellow, and red, the goal is not always to be sitting in green, right? It's not about being the best. It's about knowing, okay, I'm in this meeting right now. I'm feeling nervous. Like, I'm feeling some flutters. My body's saying, hey, there's some stress. Or your body's saying, hey, Deb, there's some stress. There's something here. Stress is not always a bad thing. Stress activates us and gets us ready. So we can say, here's what often happens. It's like, oh, damn it, these stupid butterflies. Like, I should be over this by now. I've run thousands of meetings. Why am I even feeling this? Stop it, body. So the body's going to be like, all right, sister, well, we'll go away for a little bit, but we're going to come back and we're going to bug you again. If we can say, oh, yes, you know what? These butterflies, thank you. Thank you, body. Thank you, whatever. And just, you know, acknowledge it. And then how can I resource myself to tell my body that we're good, we got it, we're all good, so that you can use that stress or that activated state to get you into the green state and to get you into more of a flow. That's the key. And so terms like resourcing, knowing our state, honestly, Deb, I mean, it's changed my life. I'm aware now when I'm getting into a more activated state or when I'm in the red state. And we're going to fluctuate through all three of those states. But we cannot go from like red directly up into the green state.
So where I want to go with this is be aware. So that's the first step in being able to manage or do something with itself.
Can I say one thing though, Deb? It's more than being aware. I'd say it's be inviting. Invite those sensations and get curious. Get curious with the sensations and the signs that your body is talking to you with.
All right. That is a very positive spin versus I'm going to compartmentalize it and ignore it. And then I'll deal with it later and go do my meditation practice to get me more relaxed.
Exactly.
That's what they say. So, okay. So just know I'm stressed. I got butterflies, but I got this meeting. I know what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Just say there's something there that is causing me to feel at an excited state.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But then you talk about resourcing, and I think you're talking about in your work co-regulation. What, knowing that we have these different states and we're curious about it, but then what do we do with this information to maybe become better leaders or to manage it or not manage it? Go with it. Do something with this energy.
So we've got these butterflies going. We've acknowledged it. We're not pushing it away. The fastest way of resourcing is intentional breathing. It's the fastest way to communicate through your bodily functions. So the neat thing about breathing is it's involuntary, but it's also voluntary. So taking like three intentional deep breaths is one method. You can do something called cyclic sighing, which is two breaths in and then a longer exhale out. And by doing that, you're communicating back in your body's language to say, okay, there's no tiger here. There's nothing that we're going to have to fight against. We're good. And so that's one way to resource in the moment. You don't have to pay money for it. Nobody has to see it. You don't need to shut the lights all off and like have everybody hold hands. You can acknowledge it and do it. It's the fastest and most beautiful way. There's lots of other ways to resource. You know, some people will use tapping, which again is a kinesthetic way of talking to your body. Some people will put their feet on the floor and ground, maybe say some mantras. They might set an intention. It's really taking that pause. I mean, Deb, you and I have been in this space for a long time. The pace of keeping up with everything, it can carry us away. And these things, these small things, just tell our body, I'm right here. I'm present. Yes, there is a lot to do. Okay, we're going to do this now. And so it brings our body back into a calmer state. Why I believe trauma-informed leadership is an important perspective for leaders to understand is our ability to hear and understand signals from our body is challenged when there's trauma stored in our body. I'll use myself as an example. I wanted to be a tough cookie for lack of a better word, but I wanted to be strong. Mm-hmm. It's not even that I wanted to admit, I didn't think that I had any trauma in my life because I equated it to an event.
Yes.
Fact is, I had a father who was an alcoholic. And there was a lot that I had to cope with and deal with him that at a very young age, that was beyond my capacity developmentally. My body stores some of those memories. We have things happen to us in, you know, just in regular growing up that can be beyond our capacity. You know, at the age of 30, I'm pregnant and my firstborn is, you know, 3 months from coming into the world. And you know, his father, my husband at the time, diagnosed with an illness. I didn't consider any of that trauma. I just thought that's just bad luck and I can deal with it. And all the while, all of this is just getting pushed down. So my ability to sense and hear the signals that my body has been giving me all these years, I didn't hear it. I couldn't acknowledge it. It had shut down. I shouldn't say it had shut down. My capacity to listen to the body just wasn't there. So it's like I was walking around with a whole data set untouched.
So are we saying that We can't necessarily tell people, train people through your work or others to how to resolve those events that left trauma within the body. Again, the body just learned its response to yep. these things to get, you know, to steer clear, et cetera, avoid, what have you. What we're really focusing is we're not looking about changing the past, but the body, the nervous system, the chemistry, the mind, the heart, the everything has data that it's pushing out to you into the world that based on what we've seen before,
yep.
cautious, be careful, activating your state, simply recognizing that, oh yeah, yeah, I've been here before, but you know what? I got this. Like you say, I've got this.
Right.
Helps you to move forward away from that. The trauma event, the trauma impact may never change unless right. you want to do some deeper work, though. Yeah,
right. And the goal is not like we don't need therapists in our workplace. That's not. And I'm not saying people need to go back and figure it all out. I'm inviting people to realize our capacity to manage life right now is a reflection of our nervous systems. Life is really hard for a lot of people. Because we are in very dysregulated states, which means we're in fight or flight, we're highly activated, and when we're highly activated or we run from things, we get into binary thinking, we don't get curious, emotions that are more divisive are going to surface, and then we think that that's just the way it is, that's just who I am, this is just the world happening. And I think there's so much that the polyvagal theory can help us understand and teach us that these things that are happening in our world, they're horrible. They're not, I'm really generalizing, but you know, the world is in a very tumultuous place. We don't have control over what happens, but we do have control over how we work through what happens to us.
So that's really, really interesting. And I'm going to start kind of bringing it in a little bit here.
Yep.
Your work is very important. This awareness that you're bringing to my audience is really, really important. I hope everybody out there is thinking about situations that they've been in and how they felt and be curious to Carolyn's point about, did you recognize those feelings? Now, where can you have your greatest impact? Again, right now you're trying to reach out to individuals. Or is your place trying to reach out to those senior leaders and organization that have a higher awareness about creating a high performing team? Where do you best serve? Who are you trying to connect with this work?
You know, to be honest, Deb, I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay.
Definitely, if we look at our organizational structures, the people at the top of the hierarchy have the biggest influence, and they also, their nervous systems have the biggest influence on the rest of the organization. So if you have a CEO who is in a very activated but non-productive, like not a very productive activation, it's going to cause a lot of anxiety in the room. People are going to walk in and be like, oh my gosh. Okay, so that's going to create a very activated audience because again, our nervous systems will communicate with each other. If you have a CEO who's really burnt out and really more in a shutdown state, that is going to impact the group as well. So I'm not saying like you are responsible for everybody's nervous systems. You can look after you and just recognize that your nervous system is always going to be impacting the other ones around. If you're trying to build psychological safety, recognize that there is physiological safety as well. And physiological meaning your nervous system. You know, Stephen Porges calls the polyvagal theory the science of safety. And one of the things that I think this alone, just recognize psychological safety does not just mean cognitively and having your heart in the best interest. It means looking after your body and your nervous system and being present. Your nervous system, when it's present, is not going to be trying to run away or activate or shut down. It will be present. That will help build the psychological safety.
Carolyn, this has been very inspiring. I also, again, I am continually evolving and being aware of my senses because, again, high achiever, I want to change the world. I'm a go, go, go kind of person, but I am also concurrently learning to slow down a little bit, take some breaks during the day, seeing how I'm feeling. Maybe I need to take a 10-minute break, not just a 2-minute break.
Yeah.
And also not being so focused on what do I have to get done during this meeting, but what do people need? How are they feeling? Look at all that data, that physical, that activation data. Really, really important to slow down a little bit in order to have a greater impact. I love this conversation, Carol, but I want to give you the stage one last time before we bring it to a close.
Yeah. Here's what I would invite you all to think about. It's hard. It's hard to slow down and do something different in a system that seems to push productivity and reward us with it. We can get a lot done. My invitation to you is let's get it done mindfully and with presence. And I think we're all going to be really, really surprised at what we can get when that happens. We can get enjoyment by accomplishment, and we also can get enjoyment of being who we want to be with the people that we care about.
Marilyn, you have been so inspirational to me. And in that process, hopefully, my audience is inspired by your words and your insight. I so appreciate you dropping in on the podcast. And this is not the end of the conversation, but I do invite my listeners to please check out Carolyn Suarez's work, as well as her book, The Path to Trauma-Informed Leadership. Great insight, great piece of work. And to my listeners, I wish you success and be well. But Carolyn, most of all to you, I want to wish you continued success and be well.
Thank you, Deb.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. If you found this valuable, please share this show with at least one friend who will find it useful and inspiring. When you share this podcast, it allows me to continue to help C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow to navigate their challenges with confidence. To connect with me or learn more about the Drop-In CEO services, go to my website at dropinceo.com. And until we meet, I wish you well and much success.